Hey guys, Drew here with my best friend Blake. How you doing, Blake?
I'm doing well. How are you?
As you can tell, he's extraordinarily excited
Excited
and
to be here.
very animated
Just
from that
happy to be on the
speech.
show.
It's our first show, Blake. You really don't have any reason to be happy, as nothing has happened ever since before now.
No, I
So,
heard you had Obama on last week. That's really
well, I
something.
think you might
Forgot
have
to hit
heard.
the record
I think you
button.
might have heard that wrong, since this is our first episode. Nonetheless,
Nonetheless.
again, my name is Drew. I've lived with this idiot here for about 3 years, and we like to talk about things, so
No, we
we're
don't.
gonna start recording it.
Okay.
Anyway, this is our first episode of our podcast, in which we will discuss various current events and other various things happening
He
in
used
the
various twice
times.
there. It's good. It's a good story. Anyway.
So, Blake, what's on the docket for tonight?
Mike Pence gave a commencement speech at Notre Dame recently, and everyone hated it, which came as a shock to absolutely no one.
Yeah, I heard about that. They,
Feel like, why would you have Mike Pence? It seems like he's probably maybe not last, but maybe close to last on the list of people I would want to speak at a college. That's probably not that I'm an expert, but that seems like a poorly thought out idea.
I would have to agree with you on that one though, Blake. As if I recall correctly, there were quite a few students who literally at the University of Notre Dame who literally stood up and walked out of their own graduation during his
Sure,
speech.
sure.
And not to say that he's the worst person in the world, but I mean, if someone walks
But he
out
might be like fourth.
if someone walks out on a speech that you're delivering at a college and you're the vice president, you have to be really bad because you're the vice president. That alone merits you sitting through a speech. However, he didn't convince 100% of the population of the graduates to stay through the whole thing, which is impressive in my opinion.
I mean, do you have a problem with the people who walked out? I
I
mean,
think it's
because
very.
I've from what I've seen, it's like it's sort of polarizing. In my experience, the people who are saying, oh, they shouldn't have walked out, and then there are the opposing people who are saying, oh, well, it's their right to walk out,
Of
So that
course.
where I'm at is I'm kind of thinking like, do whatever, it's your graduation, you paid, you're at Notre Dame, you're the one shelling out 6 grand a semester to be there.
Of course.
Well, you're entitled to leave, in my opinion. I don't know. I think if it's if, but if it's anyone, you're like, who cares? Yeah, go, you're the one who's entitled to be there. It's your choice. You don't have to sit through your own graduation. No one's gonna make you sit through your own graduation.
I entirely agree with that point. There, like you said, it's polarizing. There's a lot of people who would say that's very disrespectful, unprofessional. This
I'm not
man.
gonna say it's not disrespectful.
Yeah,
It is
it is
disrespectful, but
disrespectful.
in my opinion, you have the right to be
Of
disrespectful. I mean,
course.
if I'm sitting in a room and someone's saying, you know what? How you live your lifestyle is wrong. I'm probably gonna leave the room.
Now, I don't believe he verbatim stated any opposing statements to the LGBTQ community. However, the simple fact of him being there and what he stands for politically and personally would upset them to the point of where they just left the entire ceremony.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with them leaving. I feel like it's I mean I would have left too. He has said some stuff. He's a big proponent of abstinence only sex education.
Okay.
And that also just if that's not a testament to his idiocy, I have no idea what is.
Yeah, that right there, that could be spoken about a little bit because culturally, there's a lot of people, especially rural in the rural United States of America,
sure.
that is not only taught, but that is an effective and very often a good way for their culture to exist with the mindset of abstain until marriage or abstain right. until you're engaged or what have you, because you know if it works for them and they're not doing it improperly. Obviously, you know, if you wait till you're married and then you have sex and you hate it and you hate your wife, whatever, you just get married. If you just get married to have sex, then that's not the right.
That's exactly not the right way
you're gonna go about it. But culturally, there's a lot to be said of keeping the ideals aligned with the history of the culture because of its effectiveness and because of its familiarity.
Right.
So I can see where he's coming from there. I personally, it would be on probably the opposite side of the argument, but that's not to say I don't recognize where he's coming from.
Yeah.
However, I don't respect some of his opinions on the same line of thinking. However, that doesn't mean I can't respect some of them.
Entitled to the opinion, but respectfully disagreeing with it.
Of course.
I mean, I am going to say fuck that noise, and I want to just say no, wrong. He's not entitled to be an idiot if he's going to be trusted to, you know, be the vice president of the United
States. I entirely agree with that.
That's ridiculous.
There's no excuse for that. I do see the validity of saying everyone's entitled to their opinions. I don't believe that a man who ran with Donald Trump and was elected to office, I don't believe that kind of person, that caliber of individual, should be allowed to be so ignorant in some areas and so uninformed in general.
Yeah, that's bad.
But anyway.
He's bad and that's bad.
All bad things.
I'm going to say, well, I guess I don't. I guess I may not want to push it that far. But if you are not, you know, this might be misconstrued as a, I don't want to say attack, but it could be misconstrued as disrespect to the Conservative Party, which I mean, whatever. But I feel like if you are that archaic on your beliefs and you feel like, you know, abstinence is the way to go, and you know, like you should probably not be trusted with anything, really. I mean, if you honestly believe from the bottom of your heart that preaching abstinence-only sexual education is going to make a difference and it positively, then you're wrong, and I don't understand you at all.
Yeah, that kind of mindset is, like you said, it's very archaic. You're not really, not to say everyone has to keep up with the times, because you know there's something to be said with maintaining your opinion through, you know, disagreements. However, that specific ideal is not something that's going to help further the point that you're having in sexual education. The point that you have in sexual education is to safely use your body, and the kids that are learning it are not all going to remain abstinent. So if that's the only thing you're teaching about,
so I mean, statistically, like, kids just don't remain abstinent.
Exactly.
You know?
If that's the only way you're saying to stay safe, they're just going to disregard the entirety of sex education and do other irresponsible things that are not necessarily related to abstinence, but they don't care about them because they didn't care about the only way you were talking about it.
Right.
They didn't agree with it, so they didn't agree with, and they didn't agree with one part, so they didn't agree with any of it. And that is something, while that may not be the right way to approach it, you know, they are children. You learn about it in, at least in Florida, it's typically fifth grade, seventh, and ninth grade,
right?
Approximately, and they're just going to shut it down if they don't agree with one part. They're kids. That's what you do. You have to really figure out a way to get through to them, in
like actually get
through. Actually get through to them when you're not just forcing something down their throat.
Tina Fey had a good caricature of the, you know, abstinence only philosophy that was it was pretty good. The scene in Mean Girls where she, you know, the gym teacher is teaching and says, if you have sex, you'll get pregnant and die. We laugh, but that's so accurate. That's how it's
when you boil it down, that's essentially what they're saying.
That's just insane. It's laughable to me that anyone can still support such a thing. It's ridiculous. Not that, you know, I mean, obviously, the United States as a country has never emphasized proper education anyway.
We've never extraordinarily excelled in proper education in comparison with others.
Students in, like, middle school students in China and Japan, and, like my boss who's Vietnamese, he learned Calc 1 in, like, 7th grade.
Yeah, but...
I mean, that's not... Meanwhile, we don't even teach our students Calc 1. You know?
That may be true, however...
We teach you Calc 1 if you're... You know, if you're in college,
that may be true. However, there's a lot of things about, you know, China or Japan that I personally would not want to deal with on a daily basis.
Well, I mean, like what? I mean, yeah, communism for sure. I mean, it's gonna open up a whole can of worms there. But I'm just saying we could take a lesson from the education.
Oh, of course. Nothing, you know, no one place is all bad. No one place is all good. It goes for places, people, things, and ideas.
Sure.
But I think the freedoms and the value that we place in artistic and art and art in general as a country affects the level.
Do we appreciate art though?
Not
ask. I challenge you to do so. Ask the average American high school student who Antonio Vivaldi was. If that average American high school student can actually tell you that,
Is that art or is that history?
Like survey? No, dude, that's definitely art. That's music. That's art.
That's music. But that's knowing things about music. That's not necessarily learning
is equally as important. I think that's necessary for an appreciation of art. You know, if you have knowledge, like can you say I have no idea who Pablo Picasso is, but man, I love art. I think that's kind of asinine, and that's not really I don't think that's something that is
okay. But here we'll take your question a step further. Not the average high school student, the average high school violinist. Would they know Antonio Vivaldi?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Exactly. So there you go.
Right, but I mean that average high school violinist already has an appreciation for art. You can't expect the average student to be a violinist. That's the point that I'm attempting to make here, is that you don't. I don't think really we as a country emphasize art much at all. I don't think that hardly anyone really gives a shit like anymore. I don't think that you can ask anybody about, you know, the greats there. If I held up a picture of painting the girl with the pearl earring.
I've seen it.
Yeah. Do you know who paints that?
Not at all.
Yeah, me either. See, that's a perfect example. I have no idea who paints that, but I'm sure France, they could tell you. Russia, they have a huge emphasis on art and art appreciation. We don't at all in my experience in the American education system, limited as it may be.
Okay, but let me ask you this question. How percentage of citizens in Russia versus percentage of citizens in America that grow up to be actors, singers, directors, or professionals in a non-educational field?
Well, I couldn't really cite those statistics if you asked me to.
I couldn't either, but I would bet money the American citizens are much higher than the Russians.
Why would you say that? What experiences do you have to found that assertion there?
The fact that we have assertion, not necessarily appreciation, but a very high willingness to forego education in lieu of pursuing your artistic or sport related.
Okay,
dreams.
So you pursue your dreams. Is that what you're saying, kind of?
Yes.
But. I mean, they always say, you know, don't be afraid to chase your dreams, but does anyone really achieve their dreams?
A lot of people attempt to, and a lot of people succeed.
A lot of people do, though.
I mean, we have, you know, 320 some odd million citizens in the country.
Yeah.
And in the hubs, you know, LA, New York, Miami, Austin, Texas, that's a great example. There's a lot of people. A lot of
musicians in Nashville,
Tennessee. Yeah, Nashville, Tennessee. Right. A lot of people are out there.
What would you define being successful, though? Because when I think of a, if I'm talking about a successful musician, you know, I'm not talking about, you know, the guy you have singing in bars on Thursday nights. I'm talking about the guy who, like, you know, gets a record deal. That's okay. Almost no one.
And yeah, that's true. There's lower percent. But how would you define successful on the other end of the spectrum in the non-arts? There's so many people that work dead in 9-to-5 desk jobs that didn't choose to pursue something else that they loved. And they're just as unsuccessful.
Well, I make more money doing one than working that 9-to-5.
Yeah, you might make more money, but I mean, most people make far more money than they need to exist and choose to equate their life to their paycheck, meaning, you know, have a car that requires a higher percentage of their income, have a house that requires a higher percentage of their income.
I don't think so. Isn't the I want to say, I mean, this may not be exactly true, but I want to say the average household income is not anywhere close to enough to live on. Is that not?
But the thing is, the standard of living in America is a bit skewed. A, it's much, much, much higher than most other, a lot of other places in the world. I won't say most, but
is it?
It's higher than a lot of other places in the world. However, the standard of living, the number that you're saying it's not enough to live on, that's basing on expenses that a lot of people choose to take on that may not be necessary for them to survive.
Which brings to mind a question. Like, why is it that poor people smoke?
Yeah,
that seems like a horrible allocation of funds, doesn't it?
It is
not
a horrible allocation.
I mean,
of funds.
Like poor people smoke, and I've never understood it. I don't know that I ever will understand it. It doesn't make it. I don't get it.
It's a safety comfort thing. I think they found this thing that gives anyone who smokes in general. I've had many friends, both of my siblings included, who have been smokers. It's something that they found that they enjoy in certain situations that really, you know, most people have a vice, you know, some sort of vice that costs them money in some way.
Yeah.
And that is not per day, per week. It's not wildly expensive. You can always scrounge together.
In my opinion, it totally is.
But like, the thing
I'm
saying, if you just look at it for every time you buy a pack, you know, it's $5-6, right? So that's usually you're going to have $5-6 extra bucks, right? That's just most people.
Man, no, I mean, that's
most
that's,
people have.
That's
five,
where
six
my
extra
argument
bucks.
Comes from, though, is like, not if you're poor, you know, that five, shouldn't that $5 or $6 be used on something, you know, a little wiser, something that
it should,
you
know, but
you could buy a meal for.
Yeah,
for
you could buy
dollars.
You could buy some groceries for it, but
right.
The thing is,
yeah, I can go to, you know, down the street. I can go to Walmart. There's a Walmart on every corner in America. I can go to Walmart and get a can of you know, spaghetti sauce and a little, you know, pack of noodles for $4.
Probably, you know, even less than that.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, that's just a,
yeah.
It depends on where you live, and
of course.
But I think that is. Is that not a reasonable expectation of how, you know, people should be spending money?
It is. I agree with you in that respect. It's reasonable to expect that people don't waste their money.
Does that? I mean, you mentioned something about comfort. Does that food not provide you more comfort than smoking a cigarette does?
I've never been a smoker, Blake, so I'm not really positive the exact level at which they are comforted by each HM cigarette. It's one of the most difficult things to quit. Alcohol.
I've heard that it's actually more addictive than crack.
Nicotine specifically is more addictive than most Schedule One narcotics.
Right,
that
is wild.
The level of nicotine in cigarettes may not be exactly the
same. I'm not
percentage.
Sure that that's entirely factual, but
many
really
people have said
something.
That. I've heard that from medical professionals. I've not done my own research. I won't report that as a fact. However, it proves to be very addicting. You know, one thing, even if you speak to I've spoken to former drug addicts that have been on a lot of different things,
sure.
And they've quit, and they are former drug addicts.
Right.
I've spoken to a lot of people who've quit smoking and then started again. So
I think that's the majority of people, yeah.
I would not be surprised if that, you know, that statement is true, that it is more addictive than crack
cocaine. I think it has, I mean, different drugs have different percentages
of
relapse rates, you know. Different there, I mean, loads of there are so many drugs out there, and so many research, so much research rather has been done on them, that they all have these different relapse rates. And I think some of them are as high as like 80-85%.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I want to know how, I really, really, really want to know how that started, though. How, why pick cigarettes? If you are struggling for money, then why pick that? Why choose that to, why that over any other comforting vice is what I'm mm-hmm. asking, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's certainly not the cheapest.
No.
It's certainly not. I mean, I can prove that it's not the
cheapest. There are cheaper things, even vice, you know, among negative
among the vices,
vices.
There are cheaper alternatives.
I think, and this could be not entirely accurate, but I truly believe because smoking was so heavily ingrained in the culture.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's specifically America. I can't speak for other countries. But specifically America, until doctors stopped endorsing it,
right?
It was so ingrained in the culture. Everyone smoked. If you were cool, you smoked. And the richer you were, the better cigarettes you bought, the more you smoked, the more you proved your wealth.
Yeah.
And everyone, especially, you know, early to mid 20th century America,
yeah,
it was all about status. Yeah. Everything was status. Absolutely. Everything was, I can buy this, I can buy that. You know, the invention of credit. It's just, it was a purchasing society. And cigarettes were no different. Everyone loved to buy cigarettes. And there was nothing wrong with them. It was only a positive thing.
Yeah.
So we really haven't been able to shake it because it was so ingrained in our society. Everyone's dad, everyone's mom, everyone's grandparents smoked. So they raised them to smoke. And they raised them, they taught it was cool and right and fun. And even though we have all this evidence to the opposite, that it is bad, is unhealthy, it's something you should never start, people still
I mean, I don't want to say you should never start it. You know, you can do whatever you want. But I just think that there are – I have never really understood the fascination with it. That's all. It's a cultural thing. It is definitely a cultural thing. Like, people have been – people have been smoking for, I mean, as long as there's been stuff to smoke.
Of course.
But, yeah, I mean, it just seems like, man, that's an expensive habit to me. I mean, I couldn't afford it. If I wanted to pick it up, I couldn't. Because I couldn't afford it. I couldn't make myself spend that kind of money on it. That's all.
But as the rule of thumb goes with time and money, you always make money and time for what you truly want.
Well, yeah, I've heard that too. It seems like, you know, you make it. You don't.
You find a way. You move schedules around. You move paychecks around. You find a way to buy what you really need.
Yeah, absolutely.
Find a way to spend time on what you really love.
Yeah.
Thank you for choosing to listen to our fun banter, ladies and gentlemen of the audience. This has been Blake and Drew with Risky Strategy. Thank you. Please join us again next week.
Is that what we're going with? Risky Strategy?
Risky Strategy, yeah. That's what I titled it.
Yeah, we'll go with it.
All right, sounds like a plan. Right,
signing off.
Signing off. Have a good night. Make love, not war. Peace out.